You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
That was unpleasant. Welcome in to a rather unfortunate post-Game 2 loss episode of Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's winningest team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. And despite the Rockets being the number one seed in the NBA playoffs, the best record all season long, well, it doesn't really matter now. They're tied at one, now a best-of-five series with the Jazz, and the Jazz having home court, going back to Salt Lake City, a place where they have yet to lose this postseason. That's because the Rockets lost 116-108 in Wednesday night's Game 2, tying the series at one. Joe Ingles led the Jazz just a ridiculous 10 of 13 from the field, 7 of 9 from 3. Jazz as a team made 15 of 32 from behind the arc. Rockets just 10 of 37. It's a make-or-miss league, and ultimately the Rockets found themselves on the wrong side of that tonight. Thought Quinn Snyder made some incredible adjustments for the Jazz, so I want to start by giving Utah credit. I thought particularly, of course, they made a lot of threes. That's easy to say, but beyond that, early in the game, they were very active in getting Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors more involved offensively, combined 25 points on 10 of 14 shooting, and the threat of those guys on the roll. Also, additional playing time off the bench for Dante Exum, whose quickness seemed to cause the Rockets a lot of problems and breakdowns that led to those threes. So it's easy to sit there and look at the raw numbers, and yes, the Jazz probably shouldn't shoot 47% from three against air, but a lot of it was caused by Utah. Quinn Snyder, I really think, is a top three coach in the league. He is that good, and he showed it tonight. Even without Ricky Rubio, the Jazz, Donovan Mitchell shooting the 6 of 21, although that's a little misleading. Mitchell did have 11 assists, and tonight for the Jazz, it was less about making plays one-on-one. It was the shots they were able to create on the perimeter, and as mentioned, the Jazz 15 of 32 from behind the arc. Now, the reality is that while it's a best-of-five series and 3 of 5 are in Utah, the truth is that very rarely do you see the home team win every game in the series, especially when you're dealing with a team as good as the Rockets. The odds of the Rockets not being able to win one game on the road against a team they were 17 games better than in the regular season. Was it 17 or 16? Jazz were in the upper 40s, but either way, just a big discrepancy. And if the Rockets can't win one game in Utah, it would be a staggering failure. And at this point, I don't really see that as likely to happen. I mean, really, if you want a silver lining, the Rockets, after getting down 19 points, nearly came back to steal this game. The Rockets did turn it on, just ultimately they had to expend a little too much energy too soon to get back in it, when it's up by as much as 5 late in the third. But then in the fourth quarter, they couldn't seem to throw it in the ocean. Got so many open looks from 3, but just made 3 of their 12, and one of them, an Eric Gordon 3, to put them back up, their last lead of the game with about 9 minutes left. That was one of their 3, so really only made 2 down the stretch. So many missed wide open looks. But to get back to the bigger picture, because I want to lead segment one of our 3 points recap looking forward, look, I don't think that this is really going to go for the rest of the series where the home team wins every game. Salt Lake City is a tough environment. The Rockets are now going to be in a game 3 where they need to take care of business, or if the Jazz go up 2-1, you're looking at a very long series, even if the Rockets are able to ultimately pull it out. So I don't think that, well, the Jazz took home court. It's something that, while technically true, is all that meaningful. Where home court really comes into play, generally most series, especially if it's competitive, and give Utah credit, they were the best team in the league in terms of the data for a reason the last two and a half months of the season. Where home court really comes into play with two good teams is you want game 5 and game 7 in your gym. That is still going to happen. So the Rockets, game 5 would be next Tuesday night. I believe game 6 would be next Thursday in Utah, and then they have a long wait until the following Monday for a Game 7. But the reason this is so meaningful is that even if the Rockets ultimately win this series, with the Warriors up 2-0 in their series over the Pelicans, and Steph Curry coming back and looking very good in his return, now it's one game. As I've said with Stephen Curry, the thing to watch is how he responds. He came back 2 years ago from the MCL sprain, dropped 40 in his first game back, but ultimately, over the balance of the ensuing weeks, the kind of cumulative impact took a toll. There's a great story on that in Bleacher Report today about the how they're trying to manage Curry's injury a little bit differently this year than last year, or 2 years ago. But as far as what it means for the Rockets, the Warriors up 2-0 going back to New Orleans. They're looking right now like that's going to be a short series. Now, maybe New Orleans responds at home. I hope they do. But if they don't, if the Warriors close it out in 5 games or less, and the Rockets have to go to 6 or 7 with the Jazz, that would absolutely take a toll. Because game one of this series, when the Jazz effectively had no shot, it happened in large part because the Jazz had that quick turnaround, having to play Sunday early after playing late Friday night in game 6 against the Thunder. So the Rockets have got themselves in a sticky situation, not because I think they have to win game 3 to win the series, but they have to win game 3 to potentially make it a dominant series. And ultimately, the Warriors being as good as they are, in addition to just simply getting there, you probably need to not be compromised from a physical state going in. And so that's why this loss, ultimately, I think the Rockets are a good enough team to beat the Jazz no matter where they play. But certainly in Salt Lake City, it's going to be a raucous environment. They've now won every game there this postseason. They beat the favored Thunder in round one. Now they've got the Rockets, the number one team in the league, tied after 2 games, and now the Jazz feeling great about themselves. I think the Rockets can be fine, but ultimately game 3 is going to be massive. I don't necessarily think that, well, I certainly don't think it ends the series if they lose it, but big picture in terms of where the Rockets want to go, you dropping this game, and yes, there are some extenuating circumstances, but you've put yourself in a position where, in when combined with the Warriors going 2-0, that your margin of error is very, very slim. So this loss, even if on some levels with the 3-point disparity, Joe Ingles playing the game of his life, so many Rockets having down nights, Eric Gordon 5 of 16, PJ Tucker 2 of 9, those types of things, the Rockets collectively shooting just 27% from 3, ultimately, all those things are excuses. You have to deal with the reality, which is that it's a 1-1 series, and if the Warriors are going to hold up their end of the bargain in terms of being able to rest up for the Western Conference Finals, you need to do the same, and the Rockets right now have a very limited margin of error going back to Salt Lake City. So that's where I want to discuss most in segment one, and not just so much what happened tonight, but what it means going forward. Game 3 Friday night, it's going to be a very, very big one from Salt Lake City. Now, as far as the Rockets in this individual game, as I said initially leading off, credit to the Jazz, credit to Quinn Snyder. There were some great adjustments. The bigs were more active on the rolls. That got more threes from the likes of Joe Ingles, who was 7 of 9. The Jazz collectively a ridiculous 15 of 32. And you do tip your hat. Quinn Snyder is really, really good. All that said, the Rockets were down 56 to 37, basically just 18 minutes into the game. That does not happen just because of the Jazz. They are not that good. Yet again, the Rockets came out slow and it bit them. Because what ultimately happened in this game, yes, the Rockets missed a lot of wide open looks in the fourth quarter. It was very frustrating. But the Rockets had to expend a lot of energy to overcome that 19-point lead midway through the second quarter, turn it to a 5-point lead late in the third. And because of how much they had to go into turbo drive, I'm not going to call it the turbo nuclear button because you lost. Let's just call it going into overdrive. A lot of the threes from the likes of Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Chris Paul, even if they were open, they were short. The legs were not there on those shots late in the game. Really, it seemed like James Harden, who led the way in scoring 32 points, 11 assists, got to the line 13 times. It seemed like Harden creating one-on-one was the only way the Rockets were able to unlock the Jazz defense in the fourth quarter. And it wasn't like the Rockets weren't getting looks. They were. They were just tired. And yet again, getting off to a slow start bit them. And the difference between the Jazz and the Timberwolves, I said going into the series, I think the Timberwolves are more talented than the Jazz physically. But the Jazz are tougher mentally than the Timberwolves, and they might be tougher mentally than any other team in the NBA. I mentioned Quinn Snyder, but really, it's a culture in Utah. They are really, really good. So when the Rockets hit them with that run to go from down 19 to up 5, a lot of teams, Minnesota included, would have folded, would have said, this isn't our night. The Jazz kept playing. They kept running their offense. They got a few more threes. By the way, Donovan Mitchell, it was an off shooting night for him. I mentioned 11 assists. Also had one of the most ridiculous follow dunks I've ever seen with about 6 minutes left to put him up six. And that's why the Rockets were never really able to get it close down the stretch of the game. I think they got it as close to, I can't remember if they got it to five. I know they got it to six, but it really never got to where you felt they were one shot away. And a big part of that was the Jazz getting that separation in the middle part of the fourth quarter after the Rockets actually, as I mentioned, took a two-point lead on a three from Eric Gordon with about 8 minutes to go, one of the only three-pointers they made in that stanza, despite having 12 attempts. And a big part of it, again, is how much energy they had to expend, and a lesser team would have folded. A lesser team would have backed off. The Jazz kept playing, and that's a unique ability, and it goes back to the coaching, the culture, to reset and say, hey, even if this is, a 24-point turnaround by the Rockets, we're only down 5 points. That's what the Jazz can do, and ultimately, that's why with the Jazz, you can't give minutes away. The Rockets, and truth be told, they did this in the second half on Sunday, but they had a 25-point lead at the break, so you could say it's part of a trend if you want. I'm not going to sit here and say it's the same as coming out flat to start a game. Because to start a game, I mean, it's 0-0 every game you start. And we saw this happen in the Minnesota series several times. Even Game 5, the closeout game, the Rockets were down at the half before seemingly pushing that button in the third quarter. And it's nice to have that button. But if you rely on that button every single game, eventually it's going to bite you. Because you do have to expend so much energy when you are going through one of those bursts. And now the Rockets found a team in Utah that was not going to mentally fold. And ultimately, in the fourth quarter, that deficit, the early deficit, took too much out of them, I thought. And that was a big part of how the offense, even though they got good looks, was not able to execute. And the Rockets, what's strange about this game is you look, they actually out-rebounded the Jazz when the league's bigger teams, 50-48. Clint Capella had 21 and 11 on 10 of 15 from the field. So after the first, I would say, 18 minutes, they tried really hard. They wanted it. But ultimately, that hole they dug themselves, part of it's Quinn Snyder adjustments, give him credit. They did some good things offensively. But otherwise, Houston, you can't start that slow. That's a big part of it. The focus was not there. And ultimately, it caught up with them in the fourth quarter. The Rockets missed a ton of open looks, and the Jazz got the 116-108 win. By the way, I mentioned what Quinn Snyder did early in the game in terms of having the bigs roll to the bucket more, which opened up threes. Another thing they did a lot in this game, in my opinion, was attack the Rockets off the dribble. It wasn't just the Donovan Mitchell show, which at times it was in Game 1, because the Rockets, Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, they're long, they can be physical with him. We saw the guards off the bench, the likes of Dante Exum, Alec Burks, making plays one-on-one. Even Jay Crowder, from time to time, took it off the dribble. And the reason they were successful, it goes back to what we saw in the Minnesota series, when the Rockets had trouble there, which was not being able to stop dribble penetration. Quickness on the perimeter causes the Rockets problems. Chris Paul is 32 years old and basically doesn't have a meniscus. That's an issue. Trevor Ariza and PJ Tucker, they're long, they're physical, but they're power guys. Throughout 48 minutes, they're not going to be able to move laterally with shifty guards. James Harden can be a positive defender in the post. He is not very quick laterally either. Now, we said a lot during the Minnesota series that some of this would be fixed with the return of Luke Bamute. Well, one bad thing, Luke Bamute's back. But in two games, he's 2 of 9 from the field. He played just 16 minutes tonight and was a minus 10 in those 16 minutes. And let me tell you guys something. The issue with Luke, it's great to have him back on the floor. Defensively, he helps you, definitely. But offensively, what makes him an average or better offensive player, which combined with his defense is what makes him so valuable, he needs to at least be passable offensively. Luke is not a creator, and he's an average at best shooter. What Luke does well on the offensive end of the floor is slash And you can see in this series, when he cuts to the rim, he is still doing that, but he does not want to take any contact on that dislocated shoulder at all. It's happened twice now. I understand it, but I think a lot of us, we might have put the cart ahead of the horse. It's nice to have Luke defensively, but right now, you don't have peak Luke Bamute. You have a good defensive player, but offensively, every time he is in the game, you are giving something up. And so, especially in this game where the Rockets, it felt like we're playing from behind so much, they couldn't do that. And then you're also not getting much. They played Ryan Anderson 7 minutes. He didn't make a shot. 0 of 2, missed 2 threes, both wide open. They played Gerald Green, but he was actually in 9 minutes. He didn't play much in game one. They played Gerald 9, but he was a team worst minus 11 in those 9 minutes because he might be the worst defender of all. So the Rockets are in a tough spot in the series. They need more defense. Quinn Snyder is doing the same thing that Tom Thibodeau was able to do in terms of attacking the Rockets on the perimeter. And Luke Bamute, defensively, he can help you. He looks 100% on that end. Offensively, he is not. And it's a matter of whether you can handle, and I don't know if that's going to fix itself. Maybe he gets a little less rusty, makes a few more shots. But I don't know if you're going to see him willing to absorb contact, which is kind of a prerequisite if you're going to slash and go to the rim, especially in the playoffs, against guys like Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors. But ultimately, if you want Luke Bamute, which I think will help more of the defensive issues, then you know what you can do as a team to help that? It's the same thing as everything else. Start better. You can probably offset Luke's kind of offensive limitations and rely on him a little bit more to stop that dribble penetration if you're not 19 points down and feel like you're having to constantly push it into overdrive to get points. So ultimately, Quinn Snyder, the Jazz, did a lot of great things. You tip your hat, but a lot of it, the Rockets have to control what they can control. And if you get down 19 points 18 minutes into the game at home, and this was the first home loss of the postseason, the Rockets, until tonight, you could say, well, they could win an NBA title just winning the games in Houston. Well, now they're going to have to win at least one on the road. They did in Minnesota. They've been a great team on the road all year, so it shouldn't be a big problem. But again, the sense of urgency could not be any higher, especially when you consider the Warriors are up 2-0 in their series, with the Rockets now 1-1 going back to Utah for game 3. But all of these problems, you've got to control what you can control. The Jazz are a very good team. Tip your hat to Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles for, 10 of 13, 27 points, 15 of 32 as a team from three. I've praised Quinn Snyder throughout this podcast. Rudy Gobert was better tonight, 15 and 14, played 37 minutes, stayed out of foul trouble. It was quite a showing by the Jazz, but the Rockets need to control what they can control. They haven't, and ultimately, that's why they're where they are, tied at one after two games with a huge Game 3 looming Friday night in Salt Lake City. Now, the last segment, I spent mostly talking about the Rockets' breakdowns defensively because the Jazz scored 36 in the first quarter. They had 56 by the midpoint of the second. They had 64 at the break, 30 in the fourth quarter, 116 for the game. And they're not, for the season, any better than average offensively, and that's Ricky Rubio. So far and away, Rockets' defense was the story in this game, at least in terms of the box score. However, I mentioned at halftime that I was more concerned about the Rockets' offense than I was their defense. Now, that changed a little bit in the fourth quarter. But let's not act like the Rockets, even though they scored 108 points. James Harden mentioned had 32 and 11. Chris Paul had 23, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 8 of 19 from the field. Even though the Rockets topically mentioned Capella 21 and 11, Gordon 15 points, 6 boards, the offense might look okay by traditional metrics. Early on, that was just as much a problem as the defense. There was very little going on for the Rockets in the first half other than James Harden creating one-on-one. Now, Eric Gordon eventually got going, did make 3 of his 6 threes. Now, ultimately, he made just 2 of his 10 shots inside the arc, which is not good, but give credit to the Jazz, anchored by Rudy Gobert in the middle. It's a lot tougher to make those floaters against Utah than it is a lot of other teams. And, the Tony Brothers, Scott Foster-led officiating crew, there were certainly some shaky whistles both ways. A lot of contact that was let go, and of course, as Tony Brothers crews go, also times in which almost nothing got free throws, extremely inconsistent. But ultimately, the officials, not what lost you this game. it was really a breakdown on both ends. I would say defensively, that stands out the most. But offensively, early in this game, that was a big part of the issues for Houston as well. For the game, shot just 27% from three. Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, we mentioned game five against Minnesota, game one of this series, how those two had picked it up. Tonight, they were just a combined 2 of 9. James Harden and Chris Paul in game one of this series, they were a combined 10 of 18 from three. Game two, they were 4 of 15. And I guess the alarm, a lot of the threes that Harden made in game one were pretty tough looks. He just made them. He made a ton. I believe he was 5 of 8 on step backs, which were just in isolation. And as good as James is, that's not really a sustainable rate. And as I mentioned, he regressed to 2 of 10. Ryan Anderson, you'd like to think that that he'd be able to help. They tried that, but 0 of 2, hashtag home rhino strikes again. Gerald Green made 1 of 3, but ultimately the defensive limitations, minus 11, too much. And Luke Bamute, there's the rust issue, plus whatever's going on with the shoulder, maybe still not 100% or not trying to take contact. He was 0 of 2. All in all, it was a down night for the Rockets from behind the arc. And a big part of it, you look at those numbers, in the fourth quarter, what encouraged me was that the Rockets, they were able to get better looks. When they picked up the pace, I thought that was what kind of played to the strengths of Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. But early in the game, especially in the half court, no one other than James Harden, it felt like, was able to make plays one-on-one. And because of that, the threes for those other guys were not as open, other than Ryan Anderson. That's a very small sample, and ultimately he was giving up too much defensively. If he wasn't making his threes, then he was way too much of a liability. The threes, it's easy to say the Jazz made them and the Rockets didn't. But a part of it is that the Jazz got better quality of threes than the Rockets did because of their ball movement, because of the adjustments. And early on, the Rockets, it was Harden and not a lot else. Now, late in the game, the silver lining, the reason I kind of buried the lead in the offense, for the game, it was a problem. However, I'm optimistic about it heading to game three, because I think when the Rockets watched the film in the fourth quarter, when they turned it up, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, they did make plays one-on-one. When the sense of desperation was a little higher, they did get good looks. I thought the pace tonight, now, a lot of times the Rockets want to play smaller, slower. In this series, maybe it behooves them to play quicker, because I thought in the fourth quarter when things got a little helter-skelter, that's when they got better looks from three. It's just ultimately they didn't make them. So I think when you break down this game, it's more the first three quarters versus the fourth. It looks very similar. First three quarters, the Rockets were 7 of 25 from 3. That's 28%. In the fourth quarter, they were 3 of 12. That's 25%. So when you look just at the data, it doesn't seem that different. In reality, I think it was. The Rockets, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's taking the game more seriously, they did make some tactical adjustments at the half. I thought we started seeing, for example, Chris Paul and Eric Gordon out of the corners more, which seemed to free the floor even more for James Harden, also got them a little more leverage situations in those corners to drive baseline. So maybe Mike D'Antoni did some quality things as well. But ultimately, in the second half, I thought the Rockets got better looks from three. It's just ultimately the fatigue caught up with them and they're a little too tired to make them. So in terms of what it means going forward for game three, I think offensively, if you it comes back to the same thing as defense, honestly, which is take the game seriously from the start. Because I think if Chris Paul and Eric Gordon give the help to James Harden in terms of playmaking creation that they did, if they do the same thing in the first half that they did in the second, then the Rockets would not have been in such a big hole to begin with that the legs were just completely gone by the time it was winning time in the fourth quarter. So offensively, they missed a lot of threes. The Jazz made them. The easy thing to say is, well, it's going to even out, sample size, yada, yada. The reality is that while there might be some exaggeration, it's also a product of how both teams played, the looks they generated, especially early in the game. And I thought both sides of the floor, defensively, the Rockets running out of gas. Offensively, the shots in the fourth quarter when they finally got good looks, but just routinely coming up short. I think it's all correlated to how much energy the Rockets had to expend to overcome that 19-point deficit. And then, of course, just the logistical hole of being outscored by 19 points in 18 minutes of any game. So the bottom line, the Rockets, they continue to not take the game as seriously as they do. I know we talk about the Warriors and we do it for a reason, because that's far and away the likely matchup. But this, it's hard to win playoff basketball games. This sport is very, very difficult. And no team that wins nearly 50 games in the Western Conference is going to go down without a fight. So the Rockets, it's time to stop making excuses. You can see in isolation, yes, once or twice in a seven-game series, you're going to have games where you don't start that well, even good teams. The Warriors are trailing by the Pelicans for a decent bit of their game, too. It's not unheard of. But for the Rockets now, really, it's been every game outside of Game 1 against both Minnesota and Utah that it's felt like they have been fighting uphill in about the middle part of the second quarter. That is far too frequent. That is not a coincidence. And while there are some X's and O's flaws, I do have some concerns, particularly about the dribble penetration issue and Luke Bamute not really trusting that shoulder, which limits how much you can play him. I think not having Ryan Anderson confident in making his threes, I think it limits their options a lot in terms of what they would like to do spacing the floor offensively. But by and large, I think the issue for the Rockets is just taking the game more seriously. And I think going back to Salt Lake City, one of the hardest places to win in the league, it's going to be a wild environment, and they're going to be believing they've won every home playoff game. We can sit here and say, logistically, the Rockets are the better team. It's going to be fine. I guarantee you the 16,000-plus in Salt Lake City are not going to feel that way. They are going to think, and justifiably so, that their team can win it. And so while I don't think it's time to panic on the Rockets. I think, by and large, they've been the best team in the NBA all year long. But this is their first real patch of adversity. They've got to respond like championship teams do. And if so, this can still be just fine. Keep in mind, one of the Warriors teams, I believe, had a grind of a second-round series with Memphis. These things do happen. Not every series is perfect. But ultimately, the margin of error with this year's Golden State Warriors is so big that even a 6 or 7 game series, it can ultimately mean a lot in terms of decreasing your odds going forward. So for the Rockets, of course, you need to win 4 games. And I think, ideally, you'd like to do it before the series goes too deep. And so to accomplish either of those goals, really, Game 3 in Salt Lake City is massive. And I think we're going to learn a lot about the Rockets Friday night, particularly in terms of the intensity they bring to the start of the game, which, again, was what was lagging in Wednesday's Game 2 loss. Don't know how better to sum it up than that. Two magic words: play harder. And I believe we've said that a lot through this podcast, so might as well wrap it there. As always, I appreciate y'all for tuning in. If you want more content from me between tonight's Game 2 and Friday night's Game 3, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. We also go to email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries. Got a Facebook at facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Got a website, lockedonrockets.com. Always, you can check out our content. And, well, also look at our platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone. Wherever you listen to your podcast, there's a pretty good shot you can find Locked On Rockets, Locked On Jazz. We've got shows across the Locked On Podcast Network covering the NBA, NFL, even expanding into MLB. But the reason that you should find us on those platforms, you can leave us a 5-star review. That's how we remain viable to financial advertisers and remain financially viable, I should say, the only daily podcast covering the Rockets. And also makes it easier to find all of our archives. We had a lot of other good shows in the past week. Last weekend with David Locke, the radio play-by-play voice of the Jazz, previewing this series. I know he's pretty happy tonight. I was doing stats in the Jazz booth for David, and needless to say, it was a big win for him, and not so fun for me. And then yesterday, Tuesday, between Game 1 and Game 2, we had some matchup talk with Brian Geltzeiler, Hoops Critic, on Twitter. It's easy to find those in our archives if you are a subscriber to us, which, again, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone. Just search for Locked On Rockets or search for any team across the NBA, NFL, or even some MLB across this great Locked On Podcast Network. Once again, one final time, the very unhappy final from Toyota Center on Wednesday night. Jazz 116, Rockets 108, the first home loss of the postseason for the Rockets, and that ties the series at 1, going back to Salt Lake City for Friday night's Game 3. For now, I will sign off, and thanks again for listening to Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball.